Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with national speaker Max Ricks. He's going to be talking about the science of getting to yes without negotiating, a critical skill that could be useful for all HR professionals and business leaders. Max, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing? This is wonderful, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Well, you do a lot of national speaking across the country, and this topic is interesting. Persuasive communication, the science of getting to yes without negotiating. It's an interesting topic. Explain what it means.
Well, throughout at least my career, and it's been checkered and varied at best, I've found that in general, we tend to want to negotiate things instead of just understanding what motivates us to do what we want to do. And part of what I did when I was, when I say, gosh, when I needed a walker, and back when, you know, I was a stand-up comedian for over just about 10 years. And I quickly discovered that stand-up comedians never negotiate anything when they're in front of other people. They are constantly in control. And I thought I would bring those techniques to the business world.
Well, persuasion is a huge skill, and it's probably one of the biggest skills that successful leaders really need, especially if you want to talk about in the sales world, right, the sales professional. Tell us a little bit about how that can be developed.
Well, I guess the easiest way to say that or to discuss this, David, is that when you think about when you've been around salespeople, there's generally two types of salespeople that you run into. Those who you look forward to being around because they're fun, they have your interests in mind, and you know you rely on them. And then there's ones who just do this data dump on you, and all they're interested in is getting the sale. That can also be extrapolated into two types of bosses that you can be around, those who are either persuasive or those who just force you to do things. So when I ask people, which would you rather be around, basically it's those who are a lot of fun to be around. And those who are a lot of fun to be around generally get their way a lot more than those who are just data dumping on you.
Do you think that cultures in an environment of an organization foster some of these problems? Let's start at the baseline here. What do you think of some of the issues that are out there?
Well, I don't believe that we are fostered as far as being great communicators. Communication, ironically, seems to separate out what we consider to be the higher forms of life on this planet, and yet when we get to school, ironically, school teaches us things but doesn't teach us how to communicate very well. And I think that just follows through into the business world.
So when you're becoming a better leader and talking about communication, you said you were in the comedy world, right? So comedians can teach you about the influence and persuasion presentation skills. Why is that?
Oh, that's a loaded question, but one of the things I start off with when I'm on platforms, I say, how many times have you seen a comedian stand up on stage and negotiate with the audience? Doesn't happen. And comedians are the only groups of people I know, even within the professional speaking community, comedians are the only ones who can stand up in front of a room of 60 to 100,000 people and within 15 seconds have everybody laughing, and within 30 seconds, everybody's following the leader. You know, and it's not done because you're forcing them to. They just have a unique mindset and communication skill set that makes people want to follow them.
Well, it's about storytelling, right? It's about trying to make somebody, or if you want to say, bring somebody into the inner story that's there. I think I go to a lot of comedy clubs. My wife and I do, and we enjoy that. But you enjoy the story as much as you enjoy the one-line shots out there.
Well, right, and there's a huge difference between comedy and humor. Comedy is one of the meanest mistresses I know. Comedy will chew you up and spit you out. Even if you think you're good, it weeds through the chafe very, very quickly. Humor, on the other hand, virtually anybody can do humor. Humor is just turning a phrase around or telling an amusing story. And I also will warn people up front that if you want to follow a good speaker, you better be better than they are. Because if you can make people laugh, you've already won them over. It's impossible to hate somebody or dislike somebody who makes you laugh.
Do you find that when people are speaking, God knows we get in front of audiences all the time, right? And you're trying to tell a story. How do you in a boardroom, how do you then take that to a group and bring it inside an organization?
Well, one of the key components of being a great leader is understanding what Mark Twain was able to accomplish. Literally prior to Mark Twain's new concepts in presentation, we either had speakers, which were orators, would stand up, you know, 67 years ago, and they would just give a speech. And that's the type of speech that you normally find out on the speaking circuit today, and I call it either the 3-point or the 5-point. And the 3-point system says, or the 3-step system says, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, then I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to tell you what I told you. And then the 5-point system, which is something that you learn if you go to speaking clubs, they just add 2 more steps, one at the beginning and one at the end, and they say, open with a joke and then end with a joke, because you want to ingratiate the audience into you. Well, most of the business people that we run into follow the lecture mode instead of the presentation mode. And what Mark Twain said, he says, instead of lecturing, why don't you put a series of small stories together that will emphasize a point, and he called it MAPTIS, which was make a point to tell a story. And I think that is the most important thing that we can do as leaders, is quit lecturing and start just telling short little vignettes or mini stories.
You and I spoke obviously prior to the show, and one of the points you brought about the storytelling was emotional-based messaging. Could you explain that?
Absolutely. When we were talking earlier, one of the points that you and I both agreed on was that most people make most of their decisions based on emotion, not on logic. Even when it comes to high-dollar decisions in our personal lives, buying a car, buying a house, none of it is really logical. It's emotional-based, and then we justify it through logic. Well, the same concept applies even in business. When we say, gosh, I like that idea, or wow, that makes me feel good, or it sounds great, well, absolutely, then we justify it through logic. And that's emotional-based messaging, just says get rid of the list, get rid of the bullets, get rid of the feature mode, and let's just tell a story that grabs people emotionally, pulls on their heartstrings.
We're talking about using humor, using storytelling, and using some motivational triggers. Tell me some of the pitfalls, the downside to doing this, because as we all know, humor is a little subjective, right?
It is. It is. And it can be very dangerous. For example, when I mentioned that 5-point system, they say open with a joke, you know, tell them what you're going to tell them, you know, et cetera. If you do not have a great story, most people fall back on what they believe is well, they find jokes where most people find jokes is the internet. And what are the odds that nobody else has heard that joke before? So not only are you a bad joke teller, because most people are not good joke tellers, but they've already heard it. And once you hear a joke, you know, who wants to hear it again? But how many times have you heard a great story, and when you're around other people, you want that good storyteller to share that story again? Well, if you're not good at telling jokes, just learn how to tell a good story.
I think that's true. I think one of the things that I think about is when I'm engaged in a meeting, some people are very dry, right? They just provide information. They don't really command a room of the presence. How do you think this storytelling, I mean, how does somebody start this storytelling? How do they create a story? I mean, I know we're going to be talking in the next segment a little bit about the steps in this, but take me through like an overview of how that works.
Well, what I end up doing, or what I have done, is because of the comedy background, and I'm going to tell you up front, I'm the luckiest man in the world that I know. because I was lucky enough to be taken under the wing of some of the best comedians I have ever been around. And it's there's a strict formula for it. One of the lines I've always loved is that if it's teachable, it's repeatable. And if it's not repeatable, then it's an art, and you better be born with the skill. Storytelling is strictly a skill set, and it really helps if you break it down into a formula. So writing a story is a formula, learning how to tell the story is a formula, and it's plug and play with all those little tiny skill sets or the what we would call the tricks of the trade. It's just like magic. Once you understand how it's done, then you're amazed at how well somebody can do it, not that it's just magic anymore.
When somebody's thinking to themselves, well, you know, I have to go and sit in front of my boss, and, you know, I don't know enough about them. I'm a little nervous to be telling a story. I don't know how to get there. How do you build that confidence? What are some, like, small steps that people can, you know, HR professionals, business leaders can take to see if it's going in the right direction?
Well, the first is never wing it. If you're going to fall back on or rely on the story process or the map, just make a point, tell a story, the story that you're going to use is one that you've practiced a lot, because it's going to be virtually memorized, but it has to sound like it's extemporaneous, and you just can't come out on or get in front of them and start making up something. But throughout the process of, say, getting in front of your boss, you should have known something about them beforehand, what they like, what they don't, or some of the problems that they're running into or that you're sharing. And you should be able to make a point or bring up a particular problem that each of you know about and the boss really wants to solve. And then instead of going into a data dump, you can associate that with the common slider line, which is, well, let me give you an example. And when you use that line, then you can slide into an example of where you want this conversation to go, should go, based on a prior example of something that was positive. And you're sharing that with the boss so that they can see it in their mind. They can feel it. That's what I tell people up front, is find out what the problem is up front. Or start mining for it. Start exploring. Because unless you have a common problem that you're going to share, you shouldn't even be in front of the boss.
No, I think you're right. I think there is an art of knowing the person that you work with, right? And understanding their quirks, their needs, trying to understand what makes them tick before you just come out and try a story that may or may not work. Because, you know, I just think to myself, you know, if I say it wrong the first time, you do remember the first thing you hear.
Yes, and there's only two types of speakers, those who are really, really good and those who are going to die on stage. And either way, wear black, because if you die on stage, your friends can just drag you off and bury you without changing your clothes.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, no question about that.
Well, think about it in business, though, because the analogy is virtually the same. If you go into a business meeting or you're going to have a serious conversation with somebody who is above you, you better know where this conversation is going to go, but you need to also capitalize on it and probably be the person in charge. And always the person asking the question is in charge, has the power, not the person answering the question.
You're absolutely right. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back on News Talk WLOB.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Let me tell you about a new national sponsor for the HR Power Hour. It's the law firm of Jackson Lewis. Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national workplace law firm with, yes, a local presence. They have 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico. But what you really need to know, HR professionals and in-house counsels and C-suite professionals, is that Jackson Lewis provides a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. Local contact information for you. You need to know this. You need to write this down. Deborah Weiss Ford. She's in the Portsmouth, New Hampshire area. She's licensed to practice in Maine and New Hampshire. She can be reached at 603-559-2700. Or for more information on the Jackson Lewis Law Firm, you can either go to the HR Power Hour website and click on the Jackson Lewis link. Or, of course, you can go to jacksonlewis.com. And we are talking to Matt Ricks, and he is going to be talking to now about psychological triggers for leadership and subject experts. That's a mouthful. You know that, Matt? It's a big mouthful.
But it's hard to rhyme, too.
It is. I got nothing on that. But we're going to talk about, you know, triggers for leadership and subject experts. How do you begin the process? So talk a little bit about here of the triggers for communication in terms of, you know, making all this work.
The concept of communication, good communication, is all based on emotion and not necessarily on logic or a list of bullet points. There was a book, a gentleman that I met a couple of years ago, and a book that he put out. And the book was called Influence, and it talked about subliminal triggers of influence. And it was when I read this book, and I just kind of had this epiphany, and I said, boy, this gentleman came at it from a different point of view, but it is the interesting fact that we are pre-programmed, either genetically or psychologically or sociologically, to respond to very certain stimuli, but in very predictable ways. And when you start looking at what these triggers of influence are, they're subliminal, and you understand why they work, then you can start plugging in these subliminal triggers of emotion into your stories or your vignettes. And you can have people become more receptive to your point of view because you're not trying to beat them over the head, but they'll say, oh, I see, I feel that, or wow, what a great way of looking at it. And you have a much better chance of people coming over to your side so you don't have to negotiate away so many things.
You know, I think that's the interesting part of this is people do seem to try to negotiate on almost everything. And rather than trying to come forward with a very persuasive reason as to why it is the way it needs to be. And I suspect we'd be more efficient if we did that.
I think so, too. But when you look at how we grew up as children, we learned two different ways of getting what we wanted. One, of course, was when you're around your friends, the person who told the best story always won, and the person who was the most amusing, generally, again, the one who had the best stories or was the best storyteller, was the one everybody wanted to be around. But when you got in front of your peers, your parents, your teachers, you ended up learning to ask once for something. If they said no, then you started the negotiation process. And that's where most of us ended up, was becoming negotiators, because we felt that if we gave up something, we'd get something in return. Well, that's wonderful for every, you know, the average Joe on the street, but if you want to be really persuasive, you don't have to give up as much because you don't have to be in the negotiation mode.
Matt, let's go through the process then. So let's talk about this. How do you begin the process of understanding how this works and making it happen?
First, I believe, figure out who your target person will be or your target market. If we're talking sales, we're talking about a market or a silo. If we're talking about being in the HR department, being a director, supervisor, or manager, who is it that you're going to be talking to, and what is their personality? And what type of emotional trigger can you put within a story or an example that will pull them in? For example, it could be curiosity. It could be the law of association, meaning that if you can show that 500,000 people are doing this successfully, then we should be doing that too. Another point of law of association is that, well, if super successful companies are doing this particular thing, then why aren't we? We should just be following. So you can add that into a story or build your story around that trigger so that you can have a better chance of having your superior agree with what you want.
Do you think it is difficult at times to, you know, figure out what you're really trying to get across for that individual person. And the reason I say that is, you know, you're trying to solve a problem, right? This individual either has a problem or you have a problem and they are the solution. And how you say it and what you say matters so much. Because sometimes people get tongue-tied, and they just, you know, they don't know what to say. They're afraid they're going to do it wrong. How do you get past that point?
Practice. I mean, everybody hears the word no, and in the entertainment field, the line is, it's not if you bombed or not; it's how often you bomb. It's learning the tricks of the trade. A great example: when I was doing comedy, I traveled with some phenomenal magicians. And if you want to see somebody who's a master at their trade, it's a world-class magician. And inevitably, the magician would have somebody say, gosh, that is such a phenomenal trick. Do you think I could learn to do that? And this friend of mine would say, oh, absolutely. I'm not doing anything a 12-year-old couldn't do with 45 years of practice.
It's true. It's so
you
true.
Know, yeah. You've got to get out and do it. But you also can cut down the learning curve by just getting around somebody who is very good at what they do, and then if you can fall underneath them as far as underneath their wing and have them become your mentor, the learning curve can really be shortened.
So you talked about the process. First was target, you know, who is your target individual. We talked a little bit about what the specific problem you hope to solve for that person. Elaborate on that a little.
Well, the first thing you have to look at is, what is the message that you want to get across? And then, what is the trigger you're going to use? And then how are you going to present it? And most people will present it in a statement-based message. Even if it's an emotional, they'll make it a statement instead of a question. And we are more tuned as individuals. We love a good question because we love a mystery without an answer. So if you can bring up your point in the form of a question, you will have a more attentive person or audience in front of you, whether it's a board of directors or whether it's just a group of employees. If you can start off with a question, you can grab their attention and they will be listening to you. Where if you start off with a statement or a series of statements, virtually all of us start developing a pushback response. And pushback is, yeah, but, or what if, or I don't agree with that because. But if you put it in the form of a rhetorical question, most people will then, their mindset changes, and they will start listening to you because they want to hear more about it. It's called the mystery presentation. TV shows do that. Radio shows do that. You know, the little teaser before the commercial break. You know, one of the ones I love, to use an example, I was watching TV, I guess it was about 6 months ago here where I live in Santa Fe, and they ended their particular section with, and do you know if you're living next to a sex offender? We'll explore this when we get back. Well, who's going to turn the channel on that one?
You're right.
You know, so if you throw it out as a question, it's a rhetorical question, more people will be prone to open to hear more. We hate a mystery without an ending or without an answer. So that's the way I start.
No, I think that's great. I mean, look, you've got to engage them. You know, you've got to engage the person, right? And I know, and you know, you've got an audience for a short period of time. You know, the attention span of the person sitting with you or in an audience or in a meeting is pretty short. I mean, I've seen studies that say 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes. You know, you could argue maybe a little more than that. But you've got a very short time to engage them until they go look at their iPad or their iPhone. And, you know, I think making sure that you get them engaged is key.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir on that one, brother. You have got to pull their attention span in and get their curiosity up because you want them to hang on every word. Now, one of my all-time mentors for being a public speaker was a gentleman by the name of Bill Gove. And for those of us who are in the professional speaking circles, when you mention his name, we all bow down on the ground and go, we're not worthy, we're not worthy. But one of the questions Bill would always ask a group of speakers up front is, so how many people in the audience do you think are hanging on your every word, and how much of their attention span do you think you have? And inevitably, we would answer, oh, 80, 90%, and he'd start laughing. He says, really? He says, you'll be lucky if you have 50% of the people listening to you 20% of the time, unless you're amusing or unless you're entertaining. And so that goes back to something you had said earlier about not everything can be put into a humorous mode, or there's certain times when humor or comedy may not be appropriate, and that is true. But storytelling is virtually always appropriate if you can tie that story into a problem and a solution.
No, I think you're absolutely right. You know, we're talking here about triggers, right? Triggers to make this work. And you have a couple, as obviously looking at the materials you provided. You have trigger one, trigger two, and trigger three. Do you want to go through those? Because I think those will be important for the audience to understand the three triggers.
Well, I can probably make it a little bit easier on you if you want on that. On how to get started. So, here, all matter of fact, let's just go through them quickly, I guess, because we have a limited amount of time. But for me, the very first thing that you want to talk to or address on triggers is what is it that you're really trying to get out to the audience? So trigger one is your message question-based, or is it just a statement? So turn your idea or the thing that you want them to think about, turn it into a question, generally a rhetorical question. So for me, it would be something as similar or something like, let me give you a great example. Working with a computer company in Scottsdale, Arizona, one of the triggers that we put out front for their salespeople is when they came in to talk to somebody, we would say, so don't you hate it when your computer starts to slow down and you don't know why?
Well,
who hasn't experienced that? And if for the person, if they say no, well, you know first off that they're not going to be a client of yours, so you kind of kick them to the curb. But once you start thinking about that, you go, yeah, I hate that. I wonder why. I wonder why that happens. Well, then you've already got them because they're in question mode. The trigger, too, are you trying to sell them a solution or are you trying to offer them a problem? And so your message better be problem-based instead of solution-based, because unless you can identify a problem that the person that you're across the table from, you share in common, they don't care about a solution unless they have a problem. So they have to recognize that they have a problem and that you have a solution that they can't live without. And then trigger number three, of course, is can you create suspense or curiosity? Again, I go to the example of don't you hate it when your computer starts to slow down and you don't know why? Well, when somebody's subconsciously, at least, they're going to say, God, I hate that when that happens. Then the next question they're going to have is, gosh, I wonder why that happens. Well, you've already got them. So then you can continue with your presentation and even share a little story about how you fixed that problem for one of your other clients. So it's not a sales pitch. It's just a story.
Now, this is really good stuff because I think one of the things that's interesting here is it's making you rethink your communication strategy in a little bit of a different way. And this is by not only engaging the person, but finding out a way of making sure that they're engaged with you and staying engaged with you. We're talking with Matt Ricks at mattricks.com, getting to yes without negotiating. We're going to be right back from the HR Power Hour studios here at News Talk WLOB. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter, and the law firm of Jackson Lewis. All we do is work. And we're talking with Matt Rex. Matt, thanks for being on the show today.
This is such a pleasure. I enjoyed this.
You're out in New Mexico, are you not?
Oh, I am. I'm in the land of enchantment, the land of our state question is green or red when it comes to chili.
Wow, those are important questions.
Yeah, for us. Well, as soon as we become a real state, we'll have a lot more fun. But I love it out here.
That's pretty funny. Hey, you know, it's interesting. We're certainly talking about getting to yes without negotiating. And you, in the last segment, talked a little bit about the process that people should think about. And I do think that it's solid. What I'd like to do is ask you to provide to the audience, because, heck, you're a comedian. Heck, you like to tell stories. So I'd love you to tell the audience about a success and how it worked and why you were brought in to talk about it and kind of work through this whole process. Take a few minutes and lay out your case and how it was successful.
Well, let me share with you the story about Scottsdale, Arizona, computer company that I did some work with, because I really like that story. It's a very good example of how things work and how beforehand, if you're just doing a data dump or a typical marketing campaign, advertising campaign, and sales campaign, how it can just get lost in the noise. One of the things that I like to ask people up front is, how many commercials or advertisements do you think you see every single day? And it's shocking when the experts tell us that we see, on average, over 1,000 advertisements, commercials, or sales pitches every single day.
Wow.
So if we take that at face value and say, okay, some of them say up to 2,500, but let's just make this number easy. Let's say 1,000. How many commercials do you remember yesterday? And... okay, that's not even rhetorical. How many do you remember, David?
I'm just thinking to myself, since I was trying to remember what I did an hour ago, this could be a while.
Tequila getting you again.
Well, you know, I think the ones I remember are the ones that I've heard repeated over and over again. So, you know, I'd say probably there's about 10 or 20 that I could think of right off the top of my head.
Okay, and that is way above average. Most people in an audience will say one, maybe two.
Well, it's probably because I do radio, right?
Yes.
So I'm a little in tune to it.
The curse of knowledge and the curse of career.
Absolutely.
We rarely get out of that. But most people say that they can only remember one or two commercials a day. Now, of all of the commercials that are put out there, that's pretty sad when you think of the response rate on the people who hear those commercials is virtually zero. So I ran into that when I was in Scottsdale. That's a great little segue going back into the Scottsdale concept. And I was driving down the road and heard this commercial. And the commercial said, this is Scottsdale Computers. We fix computers. We can build you a new one. We can fix the one you've got. We do software. We do testing. And I'm yawning. So I just happened to call them up and explain what I did. And through a series of quick meetings, we decided that we were going to change one of their messages on one of their radio stations to see if we could change the response rate and to see if it was measurable. So we changed the commercial, and this is how the commercial went. Voice number one said, "Don't you hate it when your computer starts to slow down and you don't know why?" There's a slight pause, and the second voice, very dissimilar from the first one, says, "Yeah, I wonder why that happens." And the first voice comes back in and says, "Well, I've heard it can be caused by your computer being infected by a virus or a worm or a Trojan." And the second one goes, "Oh, I don't like that. What could happen?" And the first one says, "You could lose all of your data within 3 seconds and it would never be recoverable." So then a third voice comes in and says, "Scottsdale Computer Company, if you've noticed that your computer is slowing down and you don't know why, bring it in. We'll test it for free and we'll tell you how you can fix it." And the response rate within 1 week went up by 400%. That is an amazing change from what they had before, and it was all based on a series of questions.
I think that certainly illustrates a way of advertising, or if you want to talk about relaying a message, that is more precise and gets people thinking. It does. It really does make you think about how you perceive a message that comes across. When you're thinking about someone that's going to be dealing with a person, right? You're kind of talking about the commercial side. Let me take that inside a company for a minute.
Okay.
Two people trying to get someone to maybe do something differently, trying to change behavior maybe, or something to that aspect. Do you have anything that could provide an example of that?
Sure. One of the groups I just got through working with in the New Mexico area was a group of purchasing professionals. And they were laughing when I first started talking to them because they could not imagine in the world how storytelling would be able to help them because they never negotiate.
That's true.
And they said, and who are we selling to? And I said, well, you're selling to people within the organization, not outside of the organization. Your audience is, will be either your peers or your uppers. And so I coach them through a series of questions that they should ask to demonstrate to their superiors how important their job really is and what they really do. For example, when you think about purchasing managers, you just think of somebody who finds a product, finds a supplier, and gets the cheapest price. And what I found out, much to even my amazement, is their position within the company is amazingly powerful. Because not only do they save money, but they're also contract negotiators, and they go through a whole bunch of different things to make the company more profitable. It's called logistics. So during an upcoming meeting with one of the people in this group, the first thing I had her ask the group was, do you have any idea what logistics really means and how much money we're really saving you? And, of course, if you ask that question and people did not know, and she had just a little bit of information about how much money she saved the company, but then she gave an example of how purchasing one product, she saved the company over $5.5 million because she renegotiated the contract under which that piece of equipment was purchased, complete with maintenance and everything else that went with it, a maintenance package. They had no idea how important purchasing could be. HR is just like that, because HR purchasing, and I was a quality assurance person for years also, we're thought of strictly as a cost center. We're an expense. They don't see the true value in us unless we point it out to them.
I think you're absolutely correct. We've talked about on this show the fact that human resource has to do a better job of showing their value. And in fact, when you think about it, human resources deals with the single most important thing at any company, and that's the people.
Absolutely. And when we talk about people, here's another example. It's very hard to get non-HR people interested in the DISC theory, the DISC.
Yep.
And one of the ways that I present DISC to people is not the DISC, but it's called the BIRD theory. Now, it's not mine. I wish I could claim it, but it's not. But people can remember things easier if you make it or turn it into a mental picture for them, or they can develop a mental image. So I talk about the bird theory. Instead of D-I-S-C, I say just imagine four birds, an owl, an eagle, a peacock, and a dove. The eagle is the take no prisoners, I'm the leader, come on, let's go, follow me personality. The peacock is if it makes me look better and people like me because of it, then I'm all in. The owl is the just give me the facts, give me the figures, don't fluff it up with any stories. And then the dove is, if everybody else is doing it and it looks good and everybody agrees, then sure, I'll go along with it. I've told you that once, and once you understand the four birds, or you can memorize the four birds and see them in your mind, you'll have no problem with the DISC theory after that.
That is an excellent idea. I mean, I have not heard that, but there is a lot of truth to that. And I think about presentations for executives. I mean, certainly I do speaking, and obviously you do as well. I have really gone away from PowerPoint, gone away from words, and almost gone more to pictures on a screen because people remember them more. And then you can talk about the concepts behind it. Do you see the same thing when you're trying to teach people to communicate with an internal party?
Oh, yes, sir. Again, preaching to the choir. Nobody likes to see, except for the author, nobody likes to see a huge list of bullet points that they can use as their talking points because they're too lazy to memorize a speech. death by PowerPoint. I mean, how many times have we been in a PowerPoint presentation where we're just praying to God that he just takes us out? You know, it's, gosh, you know, shoot me now. Get me out of this.
Yeah.
As an example, there was a presentation I sat in, this must have been about a year ago. This guy was giving a presentation on solar energy and solar collectors. And he made the mistake of not only putting bullet points on his slides, but he numbered them. So it
oh,
was,
no.
Yeah, he got, and it was 12 of 86, and he only had 45 minutes. And he stopped on slide 12, and he kind of looked at the audience, and he says, I know this is very technical. I hope I'm not boring you. And a guy sitting next to me at another table said, oh, no, don't worry about that. We stopped listening 10 minutes ago.
Woof.
How do you Woof. Regain control of that?
Right.
First, nobody wants to see bullet points. And we are visual people, and we memorize or remember things by creating a mental image within our own mind. And that's where the emotion part comes in. So if you're going to make a point, show a picture, and then build your points around that picture. People will remember that. We are, when we get in front of people, we need to be wordsmiths, and we need to know how to create a story that somebody can recreate in their mind as a mental video clip.
No, I think you're right. I mean, this whole thing of what you're talking about, persuasive communication, is something that I don't think people do well. And at least I don't see a lot of it out there. I just don't see professionals doing very well out there. And so the listeners can take a lot away from this.
Yes. One of the examples I give of building a story and then making that story fit so many different scenarios. One thing I can talk about is the law of unintended consequences. When you literally say, well, I know that's what I said, but that's not what I meant.
Right, yeah.
How many times have we run into that? Well, I'll compress this story down so that it'll fit within this segment. But the lady that I'm dating is a grandmother, and I have no children of my own. So wrapping my mind around the fact that I'm dating a grandmother, you know, woof, that kind of hit me hard until I realized that grandmothers don't look like they used to, you know. And this lady is so great around her grandkids. Well, I also found out that grandparents don't have to follow the same rules as other people when they're babysitting kids, especially their grandkids.
Yeah, that's the old Bill Cosby theory, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the old line of spoiling to send them home.
That's right.
Well, one of the she had two of the youngest granddaughters, and they're not supposed to be drinking carbonated beverages. And of course, she's over. You know, she's got them over, and she brings out a Coke, and they're going, "Oh!" She goes, "Okay, just a little bit. Don't tell your parents." So while they're drinking Coke, she accidentally belches, and they're just flabbergasted. She goes, "Well, you've never learned how to do that?" And they went, "No." So she teaches them how to belch with Coke, you know. And it's hilarious. But then she says, "You have to promise me that you won't tell your mom and your dad that we did this." And you know, raise the hand, make a big deal. Well, as soon as they get out the door to their parents, one of them says, "Mom, guess what? Mimi taught us how to do Coke."
Oh, no. Nice. Very nice. On that note, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB. We'll be right back, and we will not be talking about Coke. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. I want to introduce you today to a new HR Power Hour sponsor. It's the AARP. They, of course, are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization with a membership of, yes, more than 37 million people. Here in Maine, there are over 230,000 members, and their office is located right here in Portland, Maine. Their work spans the entire state, and they are a trusted source for lifestyle tips, news, and educational information, AARP products, and certainly the AARP magazine. AARP is a great organization. They help people turn their goals and dreams into real possibilities. They strengthen communities and fight for the issues that matter most to families such as healthcare, employment security, and retirement planning. So I want to thank the AARP as a new member of the HR Power Hour sponsor family. So for more information about the AARP in Maine, go to www.aarp.org/ME. And we are talking to Matt Ricks. And, you know, Matt, we've been having a great segment here, or a number of segments, the whole hour, talking about this process of getting to yes and to persuasion rather than negotiation. You know, this last few minutes here, I wanted to take a few seconds and have an opportunity for you to kind of explain a little about your organization, what you do. And then I think I'm going to ask you a couple questions about your comedy life, because I think the audience would kind of like to know a little bit more about you.
Okay, fire away. So, give it your best shot.
Okay, I will. So tell me a little about your company, what you do.
Well, I'm a little sole proprietorship, and what I do is I choose a select group of companies or individuals every year that can possibly use my help and where I can make the most difference. And I come in and look at the company, ask a bunch of questions. I literally camp out with them for a couple of days to find out what they're doing so I can see it from both the inside and the outside, and then I start talking to the upper leaders or the individuals of the company who think they're leaders, and explain to them what the benefits can be if they stop trying to force people to do something and just try to instead of coercion, influence and persuade.
Do you think that when you're talking to them about that, they know what the problem is?
No, they don't, because you know the old adage, you know, you don't see the forest for the trees, and the other adage is, well, you know, we've always done it this way.
Yeah.
Well, working with a politician once, the line I used to him is, just because you've always done it this way doesn't mean it's not incredibly stupid.
That's pretty easy to say to a politician. I'm not sure that was a news flash.
No, but, you know, just we get so wrapped up in what we've always done, and we are, by nature, copiers. That's what made humans so successful, is that we didn't have to relearn everything every time. We could watch somebody else do it. That's called imprinting. Well, the downside of imprinting is that we will imprint both good and bad if we just see that it may work.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Tell me about your history. Give me a little bit about, you know, how you got to the point that you're now, you know, running this sole proprietorship. What's your previous history?
Well, I was born a geek. I mean, a consummate geek that had zero personality and zero social functions at all. I mean, I would be classified, I guess, back then as a borderline Asperger's. And all through my growing up, I did not have the social skills, but I'm the luckiest man that you can imagine. My background, I started off in microbiology and biochem because, of course, I thought, that's perfect for people who don't have a lot of social skills. And believe me, if there are biologists and microbiologists and biochemists out there, I'm not saying that you don't. It's just that a lot of us do not, because we're so wrapped up in that field.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very fortunate that I also had been involved in music from such a very young age. And a lady wanted to form a band, and I played guitar and I sang a little bit. But she was phenomenal, and what she taught me was you can get in front of strangers and absolutely wow them by telling stories and being an entertainer. I mean, she was so great at what she did, and I started seeing it was a formula. It was repeatable. So if it's repeatable and it's teachable, then it's not a skill anymore. It's just something you'll learn. Or it's not an art. It's a skill, and you can build a skill. Well, of course, I went from microbiologist biochemist to musician, and then that led me into a stand-up comedy, again, just by a fluke of nature. And I was a stand-up comedian for virtually almost 10 years. But I also was very fortunate to have some great comedians take me underneath their wing. Again, I'm the luckiest man you'll ever meet. And that led me into, a little bit later on, that led me into finding that I wanted to be in business, because that's a lot easier gig than being a comedian. And comedy, generally, unless you've already made it, is a young man's game, and I was getting tired of living on the road. So I ended up going into business, was hired by a German company to take over their quality assurance, quality control, and quickly we found out that my biggest contribution was teaching their upper-level leaders how to speak in front of other people and become better at communication skills. And that's kind of led me to where I am today.
Oh, that's great. So, you know, we have about a minute left. What are some of the comedians or magicians or famous people you've worked with?
Robin Williams is already moving up. He was already on his rise when I first got into L.A. But to watch him on stage as he's doing improv was simply amazing. Most of the comedians that I hung around, you wouldn't know, but they were so good at their craft.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, what you're talking about is really understanding communication. And persuasion, as you say, is the number one skill of most successful leaders. And I think that that is something that hopefully today listeners have been able to take away. So I want to thank you, Matt, for being on the show today. Certainly, everybody can go to Matt Ricks, MattRixx.com. And you certainly afterwards can go to the HR Power Hour, and all your information will be there, and you can connect with Matt. And if you really want to make that happen and improve your communications, he's the person to make it happen. So, Matt, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, David, thank you so much, and you are now my new talent agent.
No problem. My pleasure. And now your HR tip of the week. I am going to bust two widely believed myths for wage and hour payment. Myth number one, employees get extra pay for working nights and weekends. The fact is, the Fair Labor Standards Act does not require extra pay for weekends or night work. This policy is a matter of agreement between the employer and the employee. It's not required by law. The only thing that is required is an extra pay requirement for non-exempt workers be paid not less than the time and one half of the employer's regular rate of pay for hours worked over 40 in a work week. Myth number two, employers are required to offer minimum vacation and holiday pay. The fact, the Fair Labor Standards Act does not require payment for time not actually worked. So periods such as vacation, sick leave, or holidays, federal or otherwise, do not have to be paid. These benefits are matters of agreement between an employer and an employee. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with Jason Allen. He's the president of Northern Insurance Group. And we're going to be talking about the wonderful ACA, the Affordable Care Act, and the wilderness of health care reform, formerly tilted. We're going to be talking about the effects on industry and every segment within it. So it's time to get updated. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.